As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hey, this is Matt.
Hey, it's Ben.
And this Welcome. Is the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Welcome. Ben, I was just asking you about your daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who rode a Greyhound bus across the country yesterday.
Yeah, my 19-year-old daughter. Greyhound bus across, well, just to St. Louis from Indy. So.
But that is across, when I say it's across the country.
Yeah, it's not the entire country, but still. Yes. Several hours away.
Yeah. 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 With strangers?
With strangers, yeah. She knew nobody on the bus. Surprisingly.
Older women and men on that bus?
Yeah.
You don't know their hygiene routines? You don't know their criminal backgrounds?
Yeah.
Was this hard for you?
Yeah, it was. It was a little, and the bus station was a little chaotic. I've never been in a bus station.
Bus stations are interesting
there's people
places.
There's people yelling, don't come up here unless I call for your, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Would you say it was concerning or disconcerting? And after you say which one, please tell us the difference between those two words.
Well, I've never heard the word disconcerting, but I've heard disconcerting. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know what I mean. Yeah. Is it disconcerting?
Yes. No. I think that's the word, right, disconcerting. Well. It was a little disconcerting. my daughter, though, she's got a good head on her shoulders, and she knows how to ask for what she needs. She did great. So, yeah, and she made it. She made it to St. Louis. So,
speaking of making it, you know who's made it?
Who's that?
Jeff and Sid Holzclaw.
Jeff and Sid, they've really made it.
They just published a book, and they are co-pastoring up in Michigan together at a Vineyard church that we know and love
very well. And they're very good friends of ours. Yep. We've known them for years. You longer than me, but yeah, I mean, probably, 15 years?
I've known Jeff and Sid since 2005.
Yeah.
So that's 14 years. Yep.
Yeah. They are just some of the best people you'll ever meet.
Yep. They're great. Right. You're going to hear about deconstruction. We get in a little bit of their new book. So you'll really like that. But first, just a couple quick announcements.
Yes.
We are doing an Enneagram workshop in the Indianapolis area in a couple weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. A couple weeks, January 24th, 25th. We're going to be at St. Christopher's Episcopal Church.
Ben will be there. Carmel. Ben's wife will be there.
Yeah.
And I may be there. We'll see.
Yeah, we were just talking about whether or not, now that we're local, we've got one of these local, like travel isn't a big deal, so we can bring as many people as we want.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
We'll see. Sometimes I need me time, you know. And then we also have a parenting.
I do know that.
We also have a parenting in Grace and Truth workshop, parenting workshop that we're doing in Lansing, February 21st and 22nd.
Yeah.
And I'll be leading that. You'll be with me.
Uh-huh.
This is, in my IMO, one of mm-hmm. the TBH. This is one of the best workshops.
You're really speaking to the millennials from this podcast, listen up. Aren't we?
I really enjoy this workshop and highly, I just, if you're anywhere close to Lansing, Michigan,
yeah,
come and see us, come and hang out, and we'll talk about parenting, and it'll be fun.
Yes, parenting in grace and truth. It is probably one of the perpetual just needs that so many people have. Is just, you know, none of us got a manual.
The tagline is, I love my kids so much, why can't I ever express that? Like, can I ever, like, parent in love? Like, yeah. Why does it feel so hard to get this intentional desire inside,
yeah,
to get it into my body and my mouth,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because like your daughter,
yeah,
most of us have good heads on our shoulders,
yeah.
It just, you know, when our kids are acting like little rascals,
yeah, it's difficult to know what
all hell breaks
what's
loose.
The goal, yeah, we lose it, we lose the goal,
yeah,
yeah. So that's exciting. The other thing probably to mention is just we do have a boot camp in Ohio. Coming up on February 1st that anybody's welcome to come to. So yeah, if you're interested in that, we'll put links to all that stuff in the show notes.
Yep.
So events, et cetera, that are coming up, ways for you to connect with us over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
Is that it?
That's
is that
it.
All we got to say?
Ladies and gentlemen, get ready.
Jeff
and Sid
Holsklaw.
Jeff and Sid Holzclaw, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Welcome to our house.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It's good.
We're hanging out in Grand Rapids.
Good to be here.
In the Holzclaw's house.
Yes.
In an undisclosed location.
The Holzclaw's secret
house.
Bunker.
But hiding right in plain sight on the street out here.
Yeah.
That's what makes it secret.
You guys have snow like most of the year? Half of the year?
We're just learning how soon we're going to have snow. It's a little surprising to have it this early.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. We drove up in this blizzard.
We did.
Kind of crazy.
We spent the last 3 days up in northern Michigan doing some planning for Gravity, and then we were like, well, we're within an hour of y'all, and so we have to find time to be here. So thanks for making space for us.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming to us.
We are, well, maybe just give an update. You guys were on the podcast last year, and I know you're getting more settled in your new roles. So maybe just remind our listeners how that's what your roles are in your new church and your new state.
Yeah, so we've been at Vineyard North in Grand Rapids for a little over a year now. And we're hanging out with youth. So we're hanging out with teenagers and trying to develop some leadership for our youth. And then we're also doing adult discipleship. We're taking responsibility for small groups and for discipleship stuff and using Gravity stuff with that process. And
awesome.
Yeah, we're having a good time. We do some preaching. We do, I don't know, all sorts of, you know, brainstorming, just general stuff.
Strategy.
Yeah, it's been good.
Like
it's kind of surprising how at home we feel after only a year.
That's great.
So the community has been really fantastically welcoming, and I feel like people have really embraced us and have been willing to trust us. So it's been a really positive transition. Yeah.
Good.
Although we do miss life on the vine.
Sure.
I will say that.
Sure.
Church in Chicago.
Yeah, the church in Chicago.
Yeah.
So this is a homecoming for you. You grew up here.
Ha! Yes, I did.
In some ways, right?
I did.
Jeff, this is new for you. You grew up in California. Spent, I don't know, a couple decades in Chicago.
I keep moving east.
And now you're in. So Grand
east
Rapids.
And north.
Yeah, Grand Rapids is not at all like the suburbs of Chicago. What's been the biggest change for you or adjustment you've had to make?
I like, well, how close like the city and the country are in Grand Rapids. It's like 7 minutes in any direction and you're either like downtown or you're in like the country where people are driving around and guns and fishing and hunting. I mean, our kids have loved it because they're kind of giving me that like, how come you never took us hunting? I was like, because I grew up in the suburbs of California. Like, I don't know anything about hunting. So Soren's actually going hunting today. And
So
it's pretty fun that we're kind of getting like all angles
getting
of these things.
Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah. All of Michigan within about 10
and
minutes.
And it's fun to hear Soren talk about it. He's like, whether I just think it's kind of cool to participate in this like activity that's as old as humanity.
That's like one way to look at it.
I'm just going to sit and like, it's like people have been hunting since like, since the fall.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm like, that almost makes me want to sit in a sub-zero deer stand for 12 hours in a row.
Okay, so Soren is...
Never mind. Like, I think I'll read a book about people and how they used to hunt with my nice little espresso in a warm house.
Just Google the history of hunting.
There you go.
Yeah.
What? So Soren is your high school?
Yes, 16.
And he has a brother, Tennyson, who is a year and a half younger than him?
No, almost 15. So we almost,
Yeah.
Yep.
Boom, boom.
Boom, boom.
Two teenagers. We got a busy life.
So Soren's going to go deer hunting.
Yes. Opening day is tomorrow.
Oh, we would not know. Although last night we were in, we won't mention the town, mostly because I don't remember the name of it. But we went to this bar last night for dinner.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we walk in, and everyone is in brown camouflage. Everyone.
Yeah. And there's like a dozen people in there.
And there's Keno machines everywhere. Mm-hmm. So they're playing the numbers. I don't even know how to play Keno. And everyone's drinking Bush Light. And I was like, this looks like Michigan. Mm-hmm. I think we're in Michigan.
Yeah, northern Michigan.
And they look like they were all either, I mean, you don't wear camouflage to go hunting because then you get shot. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what they were doing in camouflage.
I don't know either.
Do you know?
I'm not sure either.
Yeah, just tell
it was like a Wednesday night.
It was a Wednesday,
just a Wednesday night.
Yeah. Hey, we're in this.
Camel on Wednesday.
We stop by because we love you guys and we want to see you. Also, we're doing a series right now on our podcast. We've got a lot of people who are in various stages of coming out from their tradition, the Christian tradition they were raised in. And for many, it's like good riddance. For many, it's awful and kind of terrible, sort of like. It's like convulsing and cathartic, you know, as they sort of realize they no longer conceive of their faith or God the way they used to. And if anybody knows about catharsis, it's you two, right? You guys.
No, wow, what is that saying?
I'm not sure what that means.
I guess we're cathartic people.
No, I think you guys have been really faithful to in your journey to be honest and show up over and over and over again. And I think, I'd love to hear some of your story about how you are learning to live in a faith that's sort of continually evolving.
Yeah. So one of the themes for us on this series has been like deconstructing your faith without losing it. Mm-hmm. You know, like how do you ask honest questions about the tradition you came out of? How do you ask honest questions about, you know, about these things without sort of just ditching everything. I think in the other ditch is just sort of like doubling down on like fundamentalism
retreating.
Or, you know, sort of retreating into certainty and saying, right. Like, wait, I shouldn't ask those questions. Never mind. I'll just, you know, keep my head down. Like, how do you faithfully walk that out? I know you guys have had a little bit of a journey like that. So curious.
I don't know the exact how.
Give us the formula.
Yeah. I love to do
how
that.
How many steps are there?
Well, first, but I can tell you some of my journey and maybe that'll...
Yeah, that's what we're
so I was
about.
Raised in California as a fundamentalist. I didn't know that until I went to college. But
that's
we were
right. On our previous podcast, you introduced yourself as the friendly fundamentalist.
Yes, the friendly fundamentalist. And,
still working on the cartoon series.
I wasn't...
It'd be really good.
Yes. There we go. Our next, you know, once we get this podcast launched. But I went to college and I studied philosophy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are like, oh, you're going to go to a secular college and like study philosophy. You're going to lose your faith. And I was like, well, I don't know. I don't think I will. And I did a lot of like outside reading of, you know, C.S. Lewis and Francis Schaeffer and other people to kind of bolster my faith. But what I learned in studying philosophy is that there are a lot of fundamental questions to life that really smart people disagree about. And so it wasn't so much the answers that I was learning. It was seeing in different topics, philosophy of mind or, you know, perception or memory. It's just like, these are really complicated questions and people really disagree about the answers. And I think that kind of inoculated me with the from the fundamentalist need for certainty of just like, hey, like, you can still get on with your life and disagree with people about these really important things. And there's a lot of answers. And so that's kind of where it started. That was like one. So whether it was just like, you know, is this mug really a mug? And how do I know this mug? You know, empiricism and rationalism and idealism, you know, like philosophy and blah, 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 Plato's forms and all this stuff. So that was just kind of, a process of kind of ratcheting down like the freak out, you know, certainty freak out that sometimes comes from fundamentalism that wants to have the inerrant word of God gives you the answers for life, and anyone who says differently is apostate. And then you find out that those answers aren't quite as clear as you think, so then you freak out. And and so I think like before I even had the faith freak out, I kind of had this framework of like, hey, these things are complicated. And then on top of that, I also did study a bunch of postmodern philosophy kind of in the late 90s. And so that also started giving me kind of some language, but also, you know, danger points for like, oh, if you go like go down these, you know, trails, like you kind of just end up nowhere. And so before I started studying theology in seminary and before I started ministering, I kind of had these categories of like, you know, fundamental questions in life are complicated, and here are some good and or bad postmodern options that people in philosophy have already walked down. So then when I started studying theology, I kind of saw similar kind of things. And so I think I already had this sense of like, hey, you just need to, you know, like take one question at a time, survey the answers. You know, things are complicated, but they're usually not. It's not just you go from here, A to B all of a sudden, and this, you only have two choices. And I feel like a lot of times when people go through faith crisis, it's like, oh, we just have two choices. I believed all this stuff, but now I find that unbelievable, so I'm just going to not believe any of it. And I think kind of early in my late teens and 20s, I just kind of got this like spectrum, like, no, there's like lots of options.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so what I hear you saying is like there's this totalitizing, I don't know if I said that word right, there's this blink to be sort of black and white, right? So it's either yes or no. My 11-year-old is learning that this isn't the way reality works, even though he wants it to be black and white. And so he is actually testifying to our church this past Sunday. Mm-hmm. Not everything's black and white, even if you want it to be.
Yeah.
Which, for his little sort of analytical kind of literalistic mind, is... Yeah.
Could that be our first Friendly Fundamentalist episode?
Friendly Fundamentalist.
The first episode. Not everything's black and white.
But I think that, I don't know, there's a capacity to hold that, Jeff, that I think is, I don't know if it's unique, but it's important, right? Unless you get to the place where you can see yes and... if it's always yes or no, yes or no, if it can never be yes and, or no but, I guess you could say as well, then you'll always maybe be locked into those really reactionary binary frames, which sounds like you were able through the studying of philosophy to see all these perspectives, to hold them all and appreciate them all.
I think, yeah, absolutely. The other thing that shifted in my mind was that... like intellectual knowledge doesn't change people. So like at the end of college, you know, I'd been like studying philosophy and a lot of apologetics. How do we defend the faith, you know, and modernity and postmodernity? How do we kind of like convince people of the faith? And I think by the time I got to about 22, we got married and then we moved to Chicago. I was like, you can't convince people of faith at all, at least not by good arguments. And so that's where I shifted to kind of really valuing the church, like the life of God's people is what convinces people of the truth of the gospel, not how many arguments from the existence of creation or morality or, you know, like those won't convince people. That might bolster faith, but that's not going to convince people. Just seeing people love people and have faith and hope and joy in circumstances where they normally wouldn't do that is what convinces people of faith. And so I think for me, just that also, I think, reduce the urgency level on the intellectual stuff. It kind of raises the urgency level about how do we actually live as the church?
Right. This has to work out in real life now. It's not just a pristine idea that is unassailable. It's more like, no, actually the gospel has to show up in our social community or it really isn't.
It's incredible. Have you seen The Good Place? The show of The Good Place?
I have.
You watched it? Yeah. So what Jeff's talking about, Sid, is like, The Good Place is sort of revealing the reality, just saying, you know, that you have the character Chidi, who's this philosophy professor.
Yeah,
he knows all this philosophy, and he totally immobilized by all the options he has. He never lives in any virtuous ethical way.
Yeah,
and he the show is so he's trying to help people by teaching them philosophy, and it doesn't help them. Yeah. What's helping people is that they learn to love each other,
mm-hmm.
and they form a community in this show. So this show is actually really profound in the sense it's naming what you're talking about, Jeff, and demonstrating sort of what the redeeming salvific part of, you know, this is a secular show about heaven and hell, but yeah. the redeeming part of their relationships is how they treat each other.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, which is beautiful.
And they care about each other so much that they convince a demon to end up helping them.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. It's a really profound show.
Yes.
It's really profound. Well, Sid,
spoiler alert, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, hello.
Right. Sorry.
It's been out for 3 years. It's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sid, I wonder if you could, maybe tell us what happens at the end of Sixth Sense, and also
I have no idea, because as soon as I've watched a movie, within
people.
6 months it's gone.
Yeah.
No, I wonder if you could share a little bit about your journey and your story and maybe how it's distinguishable. I know it's very distinct from Jeff's in some ways, but would you just share?
Yeah, I think I actually grew up with a pretty intellectual faith because of the, you know, I think the Christian, I grew up in the Christian Reformed Church, and I think I talked about this on the last episode, so I'm going to try not to talk about the same things. But I think I grew up with a strong Christian education, you know, that that there is a rational understanding for everything that God does, and what God does makes sense. And so I think that my deconstruction looked more like the moment when nothing made sense, which is sort of similar to that. But it's like when I lost my mom real suddenly. Suddenly the sovereignty of God didn't make as much sense anymore, because it was like, if God is all the things that we say about him, if he's good and if he's loving and if he's tender and if he's kind, how does that match up with this sort of, feeling of like, you know, and then and then people say things that are not super helpful when you lose somebody.
Oh
right?
Yeah. They're trying their best, but
right. And I remember some of the things that people said were like, well, God just took your mom home because he wanted to be with her so badly. And it's like, that does not help.
No.
Because that, like, it hurts. Yeah. It really hurts. And if God cares so much about my mom being with her, like, why is he willing to hurt the rest of us so badly?
Yeah.
Just because, like, God is a petulant toddler that needs to have what he wants right now.
Right.
Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Feels like we could have used her
a
little bit more than you, God.
Right. Yeah. So I think working through that and that was really tough to have, like, all the things that I thought made sense now don't make sense experientially. So differently than from like a philosophical or like reading scripture kind of point of view, it was more like in my lived life, the things that I've been told about God and the things that I've come to understand about God don't make sense right now. The sovereignty part of it, of course, was still there. But I think the revolution for me came through healing prayer and meeting Jesus in a tangible kind of way in my prayer life, and having Jesus show me that he experiences my emotions with me. Now, that was like the biggest turnaround for me, that like, that the things that happen to God's people affect God, right? That like God enters into things with us. And I mean, I don't want to go off on preaching a sermon here, but like, you know, we see it as early as in Exodus when God comes down and meets Moses in the burning bush and says, I have seen my people, I've heard their cries, I understand their suffering, and I have come down and I'm going to do something about it. And so I think meeting God in that kind of way of like, I see your suffering, I see how much this is hurting you, and it hurts me that you're hurting, like that was the big deconstruction for me, is that like, first of all, God has emotions. Like, I didn't know God had emotions. And then when you start reading scripture with that idea that God has emotions, you see God has emotions all over the place.
Yeah.
And then the second part of that is like, you know, God actually is intimately involved in what happens to his people. He deeply cares, and he's always at work and always doing something. And those are things that I think I had not really understood before. It was sort of like, well, God has his plan that he has set in motion, and it's just going to keep on going no matter what happens.
Yeah.
Nobody can get in the way of it. And I mean, God really does have a plan in motion, and nobody really can get in the way of it. But at the same time, there is this like participation in it that I just didn't have any awareness of.
Yeah. So it sounds like the deconstruction was that sovereignty used to mean, like what you said, God has a plan and it's set in motion, but
But I'm hearing in that, like, and he meticulously controls everything about everything that happens.
Right.
So he was in charge of your mom dying, and he decided that was going to happen intentionally at that moment for some sort of mysterious purpose. But the new thought and the deconstruct, and actually, I mean, I'm hearing reconstruction in that as well. It's not just a deconstruction of maybe God's not controlling all this, but there's also this reconstruction that isn't that actually answers a deeper question and a different question, right? Where it's like, oh, God's presence is with me.
Yes.
God actually cares about this. He's not just running the show, you know, in some sort of executive
way.
And
he experiences the pain of the fall just as much as we do.
Yeah.
I think that's the part that, like, and yes, he's already, you know, put the, he's already, you know, risen and ascended and defeated death, but he still experiences the pain of the consequences of death that we still live with.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
Yeah, so even as you described that, Sid, I'm listening to it through some of my more classical theological training, and I'm hearing, I hope this isn't too esoteric or theological, but I'm hearing, like, the classical theist notion of God is that he does not have passions. He is impassible. Right? So he doesn't feel, and I was actually taught in seminary that all of those, I see my people, I cry, I'm like grieved, are quote anthropomorphisms,
right?
That are used to describe God, but don't actually correspond or cohere to the reality of God. So that God is sort of this, God is this stoic, impassioned, always calm, always unto himself, completely sufficient, no suffering in God, right? And so then anything that describes God doing that in Scripture are just human projections onto God and or human ways to describe a God who's indescribable. And I've had a similar revolution in my understanding of God too, that God in the God revealed in Jesus Christ weeps at tombs, right? And that's who God's always been. This is what the book of Hebrews tells us. We didn't really know this before. Like, we saw him in little glimpses and starts, but now we see him face, like, now we really see who God is, and it changes everything. And so I'm just putting my own words to, like, what you're describing and saying. I think that's a powerful shift.
Yeah, and I think because of that shift and because of that connection, like, as I get to know the Word, as in Jesus Christ, the Word, better, then I'm more willing to accept the mystery that I just don't, like, there's a lot of stuff I'm just not going to know. And I don't say that in, like, a Pollyanna, like, you know, oh, well, I guess I just won't know.
Yeah.
But in a, like, I trust who Jesus is more and more. And as I trust Jesus more and more, I trust my own judgment less and less, I guess, if that.
Sure.
Like, the Holy Spirit within me can judge rightly and discern well. But I'm also willing to live with the tensions and the yes ands. And like Jeff was talking about, like, people are really certain on different sides and things are. And I think another thing that has really helped actually is, you know, I homeschool my kids and we've been, you know, part of what we have done is like classical debate. Right. And so part of classical debate is you have to thoroughly understand the opposing argument. And then actually we're going through this great book together this year with Soren. It's called Rhetoric of Love. and basically how like rhetoric itself does not convince anybody, but it's the love behind the words that will actually, you know, be winsome and compelling. And so, because classical debate can turn nasty, right? Mm. Like people can just like fry their opponents for the sake of winning. But this rhetoric of love is basically...
Good thing that only happens in the past.
Yeah, yeah, good thing.
Stay off Twitter, Jeff.
Thank goodness. Yeah, right.
But the idea that like the love behind, you know, and getting back to what Jeff was saying too, it's like it's not the argument itself that wins people. It's the manner in which it's communicated and the love behind it. Yes, and the I'm really, I'm seeking to understand where you're coming from. I really want to understand how you got to the place that you got and why you believe what you believe and why this is so important to you. And out of that place of understanding and compassion, right? Compassionate curiosity.
Yes.
That's where the, and so part of writing persuasive essays that I've done with the kids too, is like, what do we all agree on? And how, let's start from that point. Hmm. Like we all agree on this
common ground,
and here are the things that are different. And so I think even at, you know, as we look at ways that faith is being deconstructed, and I don't know, trusting Jesus in the middle of that, and also trying to understand how we get to the places we get to has been helpful for me.
Yeah. So if I'm hearing you right, there's sort of this move to sort of this uncontrolling surrender to God's presence.
Yes.
Rather than this controlling certainty of facts about God.
Right. You know, and I mean, we've talked in the language before about like allowing the word of God to master me instead of me mastering the word kind of thing. Right. And I mean the word of God, the capital W, Jesus Christ in the flesh word.
Right.
Yes.
Mastering me.
Totally. So maybe this is a good then transition to... I mean, so the best part of maturing in our faith, and we could use the word deconstructing, the best part of that for me, and I'm hearing this also in your stories, is not sort of just standing outside of everything and tearing it down, but it is actually some reconstruction, some building back up, right? And so part of the things you are doing now, this podcast that you've started, this book you've written that's coming out in the next year, are part of how you're reconstructing and beginning to inhabit and live in this new place. Can you share a little bit, maybe about your podcast, first of all, and then how your book is related to that?
Yeah, well, we just launched our podcast, which is called The God With Us Podcast. And it's all just about kind of the themes Sid was sharing. We've started off with a lot of actual like linking of neuroscience and spiritual formation and how does...
And what it means to be created in the image of God to image God in the world.
And so for us, like our whole podcast is based around the idea, and I teach my theology classes the same way, of when we read the biblical story, if you read the first couple chapters right, the problem that emerges is not the, oh, what is God going to do about sin problem. This is often how I was taught, is like you get to Genesis 3 and sin has entered the world, and now God's like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do about this sin problem?
Jeff, hang on. This is really important. I was taught... I had a conversation in the last month with somebody who was adamant that Genesis 3 is all about humans violating God's holy standard.
This could be a whole nother podcast.
God has a holy... this is part of what people are deconstructing, though. I mean, this is part of the constructs we carry around, and then we read everything through that, and then whenever there's evidence or data that contradicts that or doesn't fit into that, it creates all kinds of dissonance for us. Mm-hmm. We feel like desperate and frustrated and angry. So then that's one of the ways that's one of the ways I've heard and I've lived in constructing that. But you're saying there's a different way of narrating this.
So yeah, so we've been, if we want to use that language of deconstruction and reconstruction, we've been deconstructing, and we do this in our book too, Does God Really Like Me? Where we look at...
that's the name of your book?
Does God Really Like Me? Yes. Discovering the God who longs to be with us, wants to be with us. And so we're deconstructing the idea that like God set up this garden situation and he made a rule to remind us that God is in charge and we are not, and that we are the subjects and that he is the ruler. This is kind of what we've deconstructed. And what we talk about in our book and quite a bit in our podcast is, no, God is actually a loving father who has created the whole world for us to live in. And the Garden of Eden is like a microcosm of the whole kind of house of creation that we're supposed to dwell in with God, who is a good father. And because our God is a good father who won't compel anyone to live in his house that doesn't want to live there, he in a sense created a door an exit button, which basically says, I don't want to live here with you, God, even though you're good. And the tree, in some sense, functions that way. It functions as the limit case of, do you want to be a part of the family that I've created with all the good things? And if you don't, I won't, you know, because if someone will let you out of their house, what are you?
You're a slave.
You're a prisoner, right?
Or a four-year-old.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, and so God creates a situation, you know, and Adam and Eve sin. But as I was saying, like, I don't think the biblical story is not primarily telling us the story of how God counters sin. Rather, it primarily tells us, how does God offer his presence to humanity again? So the question that
when humanity continues to refuse it over and over and over again.
And so God's always trying to offer his presence, and sin, our sin, keeps us from receiving that. But that's not because... So anyways, we could go down multiple streams. But
right.
So that's our reconstruction, is like, how do we view God as a good father and Jesus as a good brother? And
And so the podcast and the book is that wanting to continue to put that invitation before people continually, that God still wants to be with you.
Yeah.
No matter what you have done, no matter what you have thought about him, no matter what you have said to him, no matter how many times you've turned away and refused him, no matter how many times you've hit the exit button and said, I want out, God continues to offer you his presence.
So, like, the reason why we named the book the way we did is because I think the idea of God loving us has become like an overly intellectual kind of question of like, God, I know God loves me. I know.
Everybody
sees John 3:16.
He has to.
He has to. So it's kind of this left brain.
It's in the Bible.
This left brain concept of like, God has to love me. And so we title our book, Does God Really Like Me? Because that's kind of like, that gets it back into like the visceral, like, you know, when someone doesn't like you, like if you're in a room with somebody who doesn't want you there, you know, and you're feeling it in your body, and you know, this engages your right brain, social empathy, all these different centers in your brain.
And that is the way a lot of people experience God's presence, is like, God loves me because he has to, but I can tell he does not enjoy me. Or I think he doesn't enjoy me.
He's looking for the first excuse to, you know, kick me back out.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as I offend that holy standard, God's, you know.
But meanwhile, he's not the one who kicked out as much as you're the one that hit the exit button.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I hear you guys kind of deconstructing then even just the idea of what sin is. You know, like Matt, you said earlier, it was the idea you were chatting with somebody about. The idea of sin is God has a standard of behavior.
Holiness, man.
Holiness. God has a standard of holiness.
And heard of it?
I have heard of it.
Right. We talk about holiness in the book, too.
Yes.
Maybe in a different way.
Right. Well, that's another thing that needs to be reconstructed, right? Because I think my dominant imagination of holiness was doing all the right things. It was a behavioral standard. That's how you, you know, behave holily. But you guys are sort of deconstructing then even the idea of sin, not so much as a offense of a holy standard, but as a leaving.
It's a broken relationship.
That which gives you life, right?
Breaking of relationships.
Yeah, it's walking the path of death instead of walking the path of life.
Yeah, which is, that's how the early church fathers all wrote about it, right? Because we'd left life.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, so then... there's an appeal to me knowing about the love of God, because there's a finite, discrete, you know, compendium of facts about that. You know, I can memorize verses, and I can make an argument, and I can share how it fits in with the other attributes of who God is, both essential and contingent. You know, like there's this entire like intellectual, as the French would say, jouissance, of just, I can think all these great thoughts and they give me some sort of spiritual pleasure. But what you're describing is, even last week we had baptisms at our church and we had a visitor come who was a parent of somebody who's baptized. And this person's been a Christian for 40 years. And they're like, you know, I just don't really feel God's presence. Mm. I think that's an experience for a lot of people. I can feel all the intellectual pleasure of knowing the right stuff about God. I can feel that. But then when we get into God's with me, I think most people are like, really? How? And how do I know? And how do I tap into that?
Yeah, well, and I think that's what you guys are doing so well with Gravity Leadership, is helping people tap into how is God with me in Kairos moments, and how do I notice when God is actually breaking, like my reality is splitting open and I'm seeing a moment of like, oh my goodness, like something is rising up in me and this could possibly be God getting my attention because he wants to, you know, invite me into something different. And so I love the way that you guys are doing that with Gravity Leadership. And I think that's a lot of how we experience God's presence, is that God communicates with us through our ordinary circumstances. Yeah. You know, in the emotions that rise up in us, that's his invitation to notice that, hey, you know what, you might be believing something that's not really good for you. It's not really what I'm intending for you to know. And, you know, actually delving into that emotional response might actually lead you into a better understanding of who I am and, you know, an invitation into life with me in a different way. And and I think in being with the people of God, I mean, God is with us through our communities. And, you know, how many times have you heard an encouraging word from someone where you're like, oh, that is exactly what I needed to hear in that moment? Well, that's God's goodness, right? It's not just the person. That's God at work. And so I think, you know, understanding that God with us doesn't always have to be this like mystical, ecstatic experience of like spiritual union where you're like
burning
lifted
bushes
up
or,
into the third heaven and seeing a vision, you know, that like.
Although, you know, when I hear people having faith crisis, I do start praying that people would have some sort of charismatic experience of God. Because I was like, you know, you're not going to get more and better answers to get you out of this. You just need to like experience God. I think so. It's kind of like redeemed some of that, like, is Jesus your personal savior? It's kind of like, well, you kind of do need to experience Jesus in a personal way. But that personal way comes through other people too. And we were preaching about this fruit of the Spirit, and those aren't like, the fruit of the Spirit aren't things that grow and that I eat myself, you know. They're not just for me. Like, all the fruit are like they're relational. So you know, you can only grow in love by being with people. And I think a lot of people who kind of are in a faith crisis are also in a community crisis.
Yes.
And I think those two things go together. And you have to like move into deeper and richer and vulnerable relationships. And then all of a sudden you're probably going to start experiencing God. Like, I bore my soul to someone and then they looked at me without hatred and they gave me a hug and wow, God was there.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's where you're going to start experiencing those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I hear you guys saying like there, like God is like, it's taking this leap a little bit of faith, right? There's a little bit of a leap of faith to say, I wonder if God may be communicating with me more than I realize.
Yeah.
I wonder if God's presence is available to me more than I thought. And it's taking this leap of starting to pay closer attention to what's happening in your life. Good, bad, and ugly. Like, God can be present and speak good news to you in the midst of something that feels bad, but paying attention to that feeling is really the first step into learning how to sense and feel God's presence. Like, you have to start feeling your
own emotions.
You own emotions, right? Because if God is communicating to you through your body and through your thoughts and through your emotions, starting to pay attention to your body, your thoughts, your emotions is really where you meet God. Yeah. Now, it's not all going to be God, but you start to sense where he's at work as you do that in community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's, we've just been leading our church through a whole process of learning relational skills and growing relational capacity. Because I think a lot of times what we think of as a faith crisis is really a capacity crisis of like, I've received as much from God as I'm able to like bear over the last, you know, 5 or 10 years. And then all of a sudden I'm like, well, where's God? God's not here anymore. Sometimes it's called like the dark night of the soul or something like that.
Right.
Well, it's not that God disappeared. It's actually your capacity has been capped now through life circumstances or your own rebelliousness or who knows what. And I mean this in a literal sense, like your brain, you know, because of trauma or attachment or different kind of problems, like our brains can only have a certain amount of capacity, you know, until we intentionally grow it. And so how do we learn the skills, like you said, Ben, like being connected to my own body, understanding my emotions, that increases my capacity, being connected to other people and being open and vulnerable, that increases my capacity. When we increase our capacity, all of a sudden we're going to see more of God's love or presence being available for us. So those two things fit together. So sometimes we think of intellectual crises and these faith crises and we're deconstructing faith. It's like, well, maybe you need to do a little more looking like in the mirror and like excavate your own soul and then create more spaces for God to fill in. And then you'll be like, oh, what? Like God is at work here.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does that sound?
I love it. Sounds great. Let's do it. Everybody.
Everybody get out there.
Excavate your souls, everybody.
Excavate your souls, everybody.
Go do it. We're going to sing a hymn, take up an offering. There's Jeff, what I hear you saying is there's basically God's presence is accessed through reality, and we need to become more aware of reality in order to access God's presence.
Like my physical reality, like my emotional reality, you
yeah,
mean?
What I hear you saying is like right. there's all kinds of things happening in the constellation of Jeff and Matt, and most of it we just remain ignorant of or out of tune with or right. not tending to, or we think it's unimportant. But as we tune into that, as we dial into that, become aware of that, we have more tactile places to connect with the Lord and other people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it goes back to, you know, one of your axioms of that God meets us where we actually are.
That's
like,
right.
You know, like God meets you where you really are, not where you think you ought to be or where you're pretending you are. And so mm-hmm. the more we can become in touch with where we really are, the more that we will find that God is meeting with us in the places where we really are.
Yes. Well, and the work you guys are doing through your podcast and the book, when does the book come out?
January 21st.
Good.
It's awesome. Soon, finally.
That is soon.
That is soon.
That's incredible. Well, you guys are doing great work.
Yep.
And we believe in what you're doing, and we love it.
And we believe in what you're doing, and we love it. So
thanks. We're all friends here.
Yeah.
We're all fans of each other. Great. Well, we'll put a link to the book. Where do you guys care where people buy it? Is it going to be available?
Amazon.
Wherever books
it's
are
already,
sold.
Available
for pre-order.
Okay. We'll put Amazon. A link in that in the show notes for it. If you're curious about whether God really likes you, and you want to read some about that, order the book, and then we'll put a link to your mm-hmm. podcast in there as
and
well.
I just want to say one more thing about the book too. Like it's written for everybody. Like you don't Good. Have to have a strong theological or philosophical background in order to understand what we're talking about. We tried to write it so that people can understand it.
Yeah, we wrote it for people like you guys or other pastors who are like, I'm reading N.T. Wright and Scott McKnight and all these other people, but like, I can't ask, you know, my lay leader to read that stuff, you know, without. And so we've been trying to take all that stuff and kind of bring it, you know, kind of on the bottom shelf. Like, you could just a lot of stories.
Maybe.
And people who have read it, they like, we've had people read it all in one day, like they can't stop. So
oh, that's awesome.
It's pretty encouraging.
Yeah,
maybe, really great. Yeah, maybe we'll have you back because there is this really strong theological stream in the waters we swim in
mm-hmm.
that would say, of course God doesn't like me.
Right. Yeah, that's very
and
true.
And we've had
and
people
if you
say...
If you think God does like you, then you can't be saved.
Mm.
Yeah.
Or people say that's like the wrong question. Like... I've gotten that quite a bit. Like that's just a dumb question. It's like, well,
doesn't really matter.
It's not dumb to the people I talk to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would love to have, because I think part of our listeners, part of the people we hear from is I can't leave the given in my head that God is so thoroughly disgusted with me. Like God's fundamental posture.
We actually have a chapter with that title.
The title is God disgusted with me?
Holy cow! Yeah. Well, I mean, I talk to leaders like all the time in our cohorts, and it's like it's like hardwired into their operating mm-hmm. system. Yeah. And it feels like Sid, if they dare to believe that God isn't thoroughly disgusted with who they are, that they'll lose their faith.
Yeah,
they'll become liberals.
Or, or it's just a therapeutic, some sort of therapeutic self-help,
whatever. And it goes mm-hmm. back to that understanding of what was going on in the garden. And, you know, I mean, if original sin means that you're born, you're born into a place where you are absolutely depraved and you cannot live up to God's holy standard no matter what you do, then that does lead to a place of God is always disgusted with me.
Yeah.
But if you're born separated from God...
Yeah,
you know, and you're being invited into his presence, then that's a different understanding of what's wrong.
Yes.
Which then feels like there's a, well, I'm
done. Salvation is different.
Yeah, salvation is different.
The whole thing is, yeah.
All right, well.
It matters a lot.
I just
appreciate your work.
You've just talked me into having you back on the podcast. We'll do more of this.
I guess.
We'll do more of this. Thanks for making space for us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for.
Good to be in your house.
Yeah. Thanks for coming to our secret bunker.
Yes.
Yep. We'll have to come back sometime and record more podcasts.
Right. Or we'll come to you.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Come down.
All right. Bless you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebby, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.